Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Tyler Campbell, and this is the Soups on Sports podcast for Monday, January 25th, 2016. This is the first one of these that we're going to try out here, and we're just going to see how I do. I'm probably going to embarrass the fuck out of myself, but whatever. Let's give it a go, and I'm sick of writing everything, so let's see how the podcast goes for a while. Lots to talk about coming off a huge weekend in the world of sports, obviously. With the NFC and AFC championship games, the Super Bowl is now set. The All-Star break's coming up in the NHL. Trade deadline now just a little over a month away in the NHL. Let's just talk about it. And I guess we'll start with the NFL this weekend. And that was... They were two games that weren't that good. The Broncos and Pats obviously was drama start to finish. So... You know, in that sense, it was good, but it really wasn't a great football game to watch. I mean, if that's Garoppolo versus Osweiler at quarterback, not too many people are probably tuned into that game. But because it's Manning versus Brady, it got all the attention. And it was the last time we'll see it. I'm pretty sure Peyton Manning, even if he doesn't retire after this season, he'll sign somewhere in the offseason. Where's the situation that would set him up to play against Tom Brady next year? I mean, obviously, if he ended up with the LA Rams, he's not playing Tom Brady unless they meet in the Super Bowl. Obviously, if he went to Cleveland, he wouldn't transform the Browns. I mean, let's be honest. If the great Johnny Manziel can't transform the Browns, the great and wonderful Johnny Manziel, if he can't do it, who can? So this was probably the last time, and Manning looked okay. You know, and people will point out, well, you know, he didn't do anything in the second half of the football game. That's right. But he was trying to manage the football game. They had the lead. That defense is at its best when it's protecting the lead. And they pin their ears back and say, let's go. Let's go get the quarterback. And they beat the fuck out of Tom Brady all day long. It was something to watch. That defense, it's damn good, man. It's right up there with the Seahawks of 2 years ago. Like, it's that good. But I don't know if they'll stand a chance against Cam Newton in the Super Bowl. Watching that NFC title game, the bit of it that I did see, I didn't get to see it a lot. I saw a lot on replay after, but I mean, that Panthers team is scary. And they're just scary when they feel like being scary. Like, it's unbelievable. Cam Newton is... I don't know if he can continue doing what he does and staying healthy, but my God, right at the moment, he's taking quarterbacking to another level. You know, everybody in the States, well, everybody in North America has been waiting for that quarterback, that running athletic quarterback that'll, you know, transform the way the game is played, transform the position. You know, I think the great hope was that Tim Tebow would, and Vince Young would, and Michael Vick would, and no, Cam Newton is actually doing it. And it's funny, while Cam Newton does it, that's now the time people aren't talking about it that much. Cam Newton's actually doing this, and people have kind of shut up about it. It's kind of nice. But, Cam Newton's got nothing to work with on that offense, and that offense scores at will. That's how good Cam Newton is. He has got nothing at wideout. He's got a good tight end. People don't give Greg Olsen enough credit. He's a damn good tight end. We're talking about a guy who was a first-round pick out of Miami back in the day. Was the top tight end in that draft, I believe it was the 07 draft. And Greg Olsen's no joke. But, I mean, he's only one guy. Even that offensive line isn't as good as it used to be. Yet Cam Newton's just making everybody look like a rock star. I as good as the Denver D is, I don't know how you stop the guy with the way he's playing right now. The only way you can stop him is to hurt him, which isn't that far-fetched of a thing. Like, the way he plays, he's going to get beat up. I mean, he has been beat up. I mean, part of the reason Cam Newton is only doing this now is because he's had to battle through a lot of injuries over the last few years because of the way he plays. So, over a long period of time, I don't know Cam Newton can sustain this, but right now it is special to watch. And I can't see that Super Bowl going any other way rather than a Carolina Panthers blowout. an absolute blowout. The line is 4 points right now, Carolina minus four. Man, I'm taking that bet all day. I wouldn't bet 2 weeks out. You know, you want to see what the injury report is. Maybe Thomas Davis doesn't play. I don't know if that would have much of an impact. You don't know who might end up not being able to go. You don't know a lot of variables. You don't know what the weather's going to be like in San Francisco. This time of year, it could be rainy. That could change a lot of the game. Of course, it was rainy and mucky. I would probably favor the Panthers even more than I already am. But anyway, I don't see how the Panthers lose this one. But, you know, it's a great storyline heading into Super Bowl 50. You know, Peyton Manning going, that old punch-drunk fighter, going for one more Super Bowl, trying to prove all his doubters wrong, much like he did this past Sunday against the up-and-coming superstar. It's a phenomenal storyline. It's funny, though. Peyton reminded me a lot this season. That whole storyline reminded me of Rocky III. You know, remember Rocky III? Rocky's blowing through everybody. Rocky's just beating up everybody, you know, left and right, you know, start of the movie. Rocky's just defending the belt. You know, he's a new champ. He's just running through all the competition. That was Peyton Manning's career. You know, Peyton Manning just blowing through competition, setting records, just amazing as can be. Then all of a sudden, Rocky fights Clubber Lang. And Clubber Lang to Peyton Manning was time. And time took less than three rounds, much like Clubber did, to beat the fuck out of Peyton Manning. And in no time, Peyton Manning was nothing, just like Rocky was nothing. You know, the only thing that, you know, the only little difference maybe was that, you know, Peyton Manning's trainer didn't die on his way to the ring. You know, that was good. But now, Peyton went to John Elway, much like Rocky went to Apollo Creed, said, John, I want to know how to dance. Actually, it was the other way around, wasn't it? Apollo went to Rocky. So maybe John went to Peyton and said, I'm going to teach you how to dance. Because John Elway was a scrambling quarterback. He's one of the better running quarterbacks of, like, back in the day, that was the new age quarterback, John Elway. He could run and throw. You know, we're talking about a guy who was a first round pick of the New York Yankees. I mean, this guy was an athlete. And so John went to Peyton and said, hey, I'm going to teach you how to dance. And did you see Peyton dance yesterday? Like, the old boy, nearly 40, was scrambling everywhere. Looked like Russell Wilson. Maybe not quite. But he looked good. He was moving. He was getting out of the pocket. He ran for a couple yards when he had to. Like, it was good. It was good to watch. And, you know, it helps. Sometimes quarterbacks got to move. That's what makes Aaron Rodgers so great. Aaron Rodgers can move as good as he can throw. Obviously, I'm talking about Cam Newton. Cam Newton's the same way. But people talk about the new age quarterback, quote unquote. It has been that way forever. Man, Roger Staubach was that way. Fran Tarkenton was that way. Get off my lawn. We're talking about these guys now like it's some, you know, great revolution that, oh, look at the running quarterback. I'm sorry. Roger Staubach was a scrambling quarterback in the 70s. This is not new. I don't know. Some people in the media, they seem to forget that. It's amazing how people forget the history of things. And obviously, when I write stuff, the big thing that people seem to like to read, looking at the numbers on my site, is any Oiler piece, it gets traction. I try not to be a homer for the team, but that is, you know, I don't try and BS anybody. They are my team. I've tried to be objective about it. I don't like broadcasters who aren't objective about their team. You know, I got into a thing on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, I got into a thing with Leah Hextall. Now, let's just say I was having a bad day, and I mean, I don't like being that guy that calls out a person like Leah Hextall. I don't know, a TV personality. I was going to say celebrity, but a TV personality. I think she would agree. She's not a celebrity. But a TV personality. I don't like going after those people. I just, bad moment, and I did. But it actually worked out for the best for me. She actually ended up following me on Twitter. Who knows? She might be listening to this podcast right now, for all I know. And seems like a great girl. I definitely don't apologize for the stance that I took or take on that subject, but I came about it the wrong way. Anyway, I talk about the Oilers lots. And here we are at the All-Star break. And, I mean, the Oilers are done. I wish people, for the last 3 weeks now, I wish people would stop talking like the playoffs are a possibility. Have you seen the teams they got to jump over? Like, even when they're only, you know, 2 or 3 points back, there are so many teams that are there with them in the standings that have three or four games in hand on them. The Flames all season, seems like, have had 3 or 4 games on hand on the Oilers, in hand on the Oilers, first podcast. And so it's a myth that the Oilers are where they are in the standings. They're really not. You know, they don't have any games in hand on the teams they're chasing. And they have to jump over a lot of teams. I mean, they're last in the division. They would have to jump over three teams. My apologies. First podcast. So, they're done. I think the goal for the rest of the season, though, and I think any Oilers fan would agree with this, is let's just have a real good back half to the season. There's 32 games left, I believe. Let's just, with McDavid coming back and hopefully Klefbom back soon, let's just have a good end to the season. That's all I ask. And a good end to the season, for me personally, would be going something along the lines of, let's see, 18-10-4 would probably be a good back half to the season. I gotta make sure that equals 32. I believe it does. It's my first podcast. I'm not good at math. That's a bad combination to start off your first podcast with doing math on the podcast. But so the Oilers are at the break. They're getting McDavid back. You don't want the first pick, because as an Oilers fan, you're sick to death of being the butt end of so many jokes, being such an embarrassment. And it's been a frustrating year, because if you watch the team nightly, you can see how much better they are. But then they finally are starting to play better. And A, they don't get any breaks. Like, any. The proof of that was the game-winning goal on Saturday against Nashville. How did that puck end up going in the net? How was that play not whistled down? Because there's no way the ref couldn't have lost sight of that puck. And yet, here it's a goal. It didn't cost them the game, but that's shitty, shitty luck. So that happened. And then, of course, on top of breaks like that, do I really need to go into what happened in the Tampa Bay game? The one at home a couple weeks ago? Jeez. So you have all these breaks like that. And then on top of those bad breaks, you've got the fact that McDavid's out. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is out. Oscar Klefbom is out. Brandon Davidson is out. It might be sad that these guys are your top two defensemen, or sorry, your top two centermen and two of your top four defensemen. That might be sad, but it's still a fact, and those are still vital players. With them out, you don't have a chance. You really don't. Klefbom was doing well on the power play before he got hurt. Now he's out, and they've got to turn to Justin Schultz. And I'll tell you, trade deadline's coming up. Schultz has played better since the debacle in Calgary 1 month ago, where he single-handedly cost them that game. He was a freaky, for Justin Schultz's standards, he was a freaking, oh wait, this is my podcast, I can say, he was a fucking train wreck that night. Absolutely disgusting. He cost them that game. Since then, he's trended up. He's been a lot better. I am not a fan of the kid's game, but he has been a lot better in the last month. However, the power play is still garbage, and he's the one quarterbacking the power play, and he's there to provide offense from the blue line. The team would much rather him be a 60-70. They would much rather him be a Brian Campbell, what Dan Boyle was in his prime. They'd much rather him be that type of defenseman, I'm sure, than be safe in his own zone. Because they've got no offense from the blue line. And they're losing all these one-goal games. And plus, Justin Schultz is at his best when he's moving his feet. When he's active, that's when he's great at both ends. Not just not just offensively. He's better defensively when he's active. I mean, the guy's skating ability helps him recover any rush up the ice, but he can't figure it out. I don't think, you know, when it comes to defensemen, the one thing I always look at is intelligence. And I really question Justin Schultz's intelligence with the way he plays the game, because the talent is all there. It really is. You know, he's like a poor man's Jay Bouwmeester. You know, you watch Jay Bouwmeester and, you know, you see him skate, you see his size, you know, you see all the stuff that he has, and you just kind of go, why is he not the best defenseman in hockey? And with Justin Schultz, I'm not asking why he's not the best defenseman in hockey. Maybe Craig McTavish is, future Norris Trophy winner. Maybe Craig McTavish is questioning that. I'm not. I do question why Justin Schultz isn't at least a number three defenseman in this league, if not a top pairing guy. I don't think he's a number one. I don't even think he should be a number one on a bad team. Like, I've never thought that about Justin Schultz. But I do think he should be the type of defenseman that's a Brian Campbell in his prime, Mike Green in 2009, maybe not to that extent of 30 goals, but I think you know what I'm saying. That high-scoring top four defenseman who can, you know, quarterback, be an elite power play quarterback. Should be that guy. He's not. He's soft as can be. And, of course, the other guy that's like that is Jordan Eberle. And I wrote about Jordan Eberle on Sunday morning. And I talked about how Jordan Eberle is going to be gone. I don't see how Jordan Eberle wouldn't be traded by Peter Chiarelli before next season. People will say, well, you got to get a defenseman for him. I don't think Peter Chiarelli is going to wait to try and get a defenseman for Jordan Eberle. I mean, small wingers aren't going to bring back a defenseman of consequence anyway. They're just not valuable. And here you got a guy making $6 million a year with 3 years left on the deal, I believe, after this season. He does nothing. He does nothing. You know, if you give him a center, he'll score 30 goals. You know, I said it in the piece, he'll play with McDavid the second half of the season. I'm almost positive, because they'll want to run up his numbers. I mean, he's a guy they've really got to get going, and I think he'll mesh well with McDavid. But when it's all said and done, Jordan Eberle is nothing of what Peter Chiarelli wants this team to be. Peter Chiarelli wants guys who have size, speed, and are willing to play a complete game. That is anti-Jordan Eberle. Jordan Eberle, I don't know what the guy's like off the ice. He's always seemed like a real good kid, but his body language on the ice suggests he's a guy that I want to get mine and to fuck with yours. He really does seem like that guy. There was one shift earlier this season. There's one goal. He might even got the goal. He got hurt on the play. I can't remember exactly what happened, but he got hurt on a play. At least he claimed to have gotten hurt, and he was holding, I want to say, his wrist and going to the bench, and the Oilers kept the puck in the zone. At the last second, the Oilers kept the puck in the zone, and Eberle all of a sudden sprung to life and scored the goal. Like, I'm sorry, but that is horseshit. Like, yeah, that's nice you got that goal, but so you mean to tell me you're not willing to play hurt to come back to help the team out defensively? But if it means getting your snipes in, you're going to go out there and you're going to snipe. Like, jeez, that is, who wants that guy on a team? And it happens. It's happened a lot this year. You notice it. I talked in the piece about him when he'll dangle. He'll have a shooting lane. He'll have a clear opportunity, and he'll try and make one extra move. I've seen him do this a ton in the last year or so, where he'll try and make that one extra move to go around a guy, and it's always like a toe drag or putting it between a guy's legs. It's something fancy, and it gets spoiled, and I just can't help but look at it and say, okay, this guy wants to be the highlight of the night. He doesn't care about scoring a goal to help his team. He cares about Jordan Eberle. It's bad, and he's still flying the zone. He's still not going to tough areas on the ice. I think if Peter Chiarelli could get a first-round pick that, you know, you can never guarantee a pick go between 25 and 15 in the draft. But if he can get a pick that somewhat guarantees going around that area, and a decent prospect, I think he'll do it. I think he would do that for Jordan Eberle. And he might have to take a contract back from somebody, but I think he would absolutely do that. And I think he should do that. Because you have to remember, you know, it's not just Jordan Eberle. You're not just getting the pick and the prospect. You're also opening up that spot for a UFA. And it is a very good free agent class right now. I mean, you're talking about Steven Stamkos. I wouldn't touch Steven Stamkos if I was the Oilers. That's a waste of money in my mind. Not that Steven Stamkos is a waste of money, but for the Oilers, there's no point in bringing in another high-scoring guy when you have many other needs, and that's not going to be one of them. You know, the media can drool about the thought of McDavid and Stamkos all they want. It's nice in a dream world. It's not a need for the Oilers. But you look at the free agents that are going to be available. We're talking about Andrew Ladd. We're talking about Radim Verbata, who would replace Jordan Eberle's goals. I'm not saying Verbata would be better, but he would be, if not as good, almost as good. And Verbata plays with a lot more speed than Eberle does. You could sign David Backes. If David Backes makes it to July 1, and people might say, well, they don't need another center. Well, David Backes doesn't have to play center. Remember, David Backes in 2009 got 30 goals playing on the right side. I mean, he only became a center when Ken Hitchcock took over in St. Louis. So, you know, you look at Milan Lucic, if you got Lucic, there's a winger. Backes would give you more flexibility, because obviously he could move in, play the wing. Backes would play the right side, like Eberle. Lucic would be a left winger. But, I mean, you got other guys, you know, I said Andrew Ladd, trying to think. Yuri Hudler's another one. Yuri Hudler plays the right side in Calgary. He could play the left side if need be. He's a left-handed shot. That's a guy that can replace Jordan Eberle too. So, there's a long list of guys. I listed them all off the other day, to be honest with you. I can't think of all of them off the top of my head. But it's something to watch. And, you know, you read between the lines when you hear Peter Chiarelli talk. And Jordan Eberle just isn't the type of guy that Peter Chiarelli is going to want. And a lot of the guys that I listed off in that article, that blog, I don't know if I'm fancy enough to call it an article. A lot of the guys that I listed off in that piece, they would fit what Peter Chiarelli wants to do a lot better. Louis Erickson was another guy. That was another good guy that I thought of. You know, veteran, plays with a lot more speed. He's got more size, even though he's not that gritty. The one thing about Louis Erickson, even when the scoring dries up for Louis Erickson, he's still going to be an elite defensive winger. And it's funny, you can't find very many two-way wingers in the game anymore. It seemed like in the 90s and the early 2000s there were a ton of them. You know, Marian Hossa is the gold standard. Louis Erickson's up there with Hossa. You know, there aren't a lot of them. There's some. You know, I'm not naming some right now, but there's some for sure. But Yuri Lehtinen seemed to lead a long list of guys in that era that just don't seem to be around anymore. It seems like a lot of wingers most wingers are offensive-minded these days. He's a unique guy. Chiarelli's acquired him before. Very interesting thought that having Louis Erickson replace Jordan Eberle on the Oilers. But anyway, I've talked enough about that. I would like to talk about the trade deadline. You know, there's other teams in the league. This is just come to my attention that there's other teams in the NHL, and they have players that they'll possibly trade at the trade deadline. As we approach the 29th of January, and it's the 29th of February that the trade deadline commences. And, I mean, the team everybody's watching right now is Winnipeg. And Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd, and talks have apparently broken off with the Ladd camp. And I still don't know that opens the door for the Jets to sign Byfuglien. I really don't. Because if Byfuglien won't move off his stance of wanting 8 years, I don't see the Jets caving to him. I don't see any team caving to him for 8 years. Because with Byfuglien's track record of being a guy who isn't willing to put in the work in the offseason, how can you trust him with an 8-year deal? That would guarantee to be the last contract he would ever get. Where's the motivation for him? Yeah, he wouldn't have. Yeah, I'd love, you know, again, I'm going to swing it back to the Oilers, but I'd love for the Oilers to sign Dustin Byfuglien, but I'm not giving him 8 years. Dustin Byfuglien brings exactly, he couldn't fit any better as to what the Oilers need on defense. I'm not giving that guy 8 years. The most I would go is maybe six, but I think every team is going to say, hey, we want you. We're offering you 5 years. And I could see Dustin Byfuglien kind of waiting around. If you remember when Sheldon Surrey signed with the Oilers, Surrey was a very similar defenseman to Byfuglien. Not as mobile, but definitely as tough, had the big shot. There was a lot of similarities between Surrey and Byfuglien. And everybody thought Surrey was going to get paid out of his ass in the summer of 07. And the Oilers ended up signing him, I want to say it was around July 9th of that year, which is late in free agency for a big ticket guy like that. And he ended up getting $5.4 million. And I think it was a 5-year deal. It was really a lot less than what most thought he would get. In fact, it was less. If I remember correctly, it was less than what the Leafs had signed Brian McCabe to the year before on an extension. I believe McCabe got 5.75 per year. And Surrey was very similar to McCabe. Leaf fans might get mad at me for saying this, but I would have rather had Surrey with his shot and toughness over McCabe. Not that McCabe wasn't tough, but I mean, Sheldon Surrey was dangerous. He was scary tough. But yeah, I could see Byfuglien being the same type of situation in that he wants 8 years and he's going to look around and by July 7th or 8th, he's going to wake up and realize, shit, man, nobody's willing to give me 8 years. They all just want to go 5 or 6. And he's going to have to settle for that. As for who will take a run at him at the trade deadline, if he's available, the Caps and Hawks are two teams that I could really see it. Now, the Hawks might have trouble. You know, they sold off a lot of assets last year. They might have trouble swallowing hard and making a big push for anybody this year. Anybody of consequence, like a Byfuglien, like a Ladd. That might be a tough sell for the Hawks this season because they're set up now. They're set up moving forward. But, man, if you could bring Byfuglien back into that fold, I would hope Joel Quenneville would use him on defense this time around. But yeah, if you could bring Byfuglien back and pair him with Hjalmarsson and that be your second pairing, remember their Achilles heel last year in the playoffs that almost cost them was having no depth on D. Well, if you could roll out Hjalmarsson and Byfuglien after Seabrook and Keith, holy hell, that's a hell of a second pairing. And I don't think, you know, as long as you had a Trevor Van Riemsdyk and a Michael Roosevelt, maybe an Eric Gustafson, you know, some of those guys that they have right now, as long as you had, you know, they got Rob Scuderi. You know, Scuderi and Roosevelt are two very good veteran defensemen. They're that third pairing that you need in the playoffs, just stable veteran guys. Yeah, that would be a great defense. We know their offense is better than ever this season. Panarin has just lifted Kane to another level. And I got to think, too, Kane's playing a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Corey Crawford's looked better than ever. How about those black pads? Woo! Woo! Those are sweet. Those are sweet. And Brian Elliott's blue ones with the blues? Woo! Woo! Those are just sick. Love the colored pads. I want to start a revolution where goaltenders start moving back to colored pads. But anyway, talking trade deadline. That excites me for the Hawks. But, I mean, you're talking, you know, I said the Caps. If the Caps got Dustin Byfuglien, that would solidify them as the favorites in the East for sure. It's Washington's conference to lose. I know we've said that a lot of years. Since 2009, we have said that about the Washington Capitals. But I do think it's different this time. It's Braden Holtby. It's Barry Trotz. It's Yevgeny Kuznetsov. Like, these are the keys. And, you know, everybody wants to pile on Ovechkin. Ovechkin, way more often than not, does it at playoff time. Look at Nick Backstrom. He's your first line center. He's the guy that's got to come through. Ovechkin does his part, and it's real easy to shut down a winger in the playoffs. It's when your center's going, that's tough to stop. The Caps, Dustin Byfuglien, I'd love that for the Caps. Who they could trade Winnipeg, That's another question. You know, like I'm listing off two teams right there. One of my pet peeves with the media is when they suggest this team should go get a player or this team should trade a player, right? Who are they getting back? Are you, you know, I've said this about the Oilers for years. You know, the Eastern media especially, just, you know, nonstop. Oh, they got to trade one of the kids. Okay, what are they getting back? You can't just blindly throw away these kids. You've got to get something back that is going to make your team better. And I've argued that the Oilers are going to have to make a trade that they're going to lose in value, but it's going to make them better. But it's tough to make those trades that you lose in value. So who could the Jets get back? Because this is important for the Jets. And I'm looking at teams, you know, I've talked about the Caps, I talked about the Hawks. When it comes to Bufflin and Ladd, we all know that Dale Talon down in Florida, he loves his ex-Blackhawks. He loves them. So you know, even though the Panthers, I don't see the real need for Andrew Ladd. And, you know, on the right side, the Panthers got Ekblad and Gudbranson. It would be a big swing to put Gudbranson in a deal for Bufflin. And would the Jets want that? I mean, the Jets are pretty solidified on the right side of their D with Myers, and, you know, they can afford to give up Bufflin, and they're still good with Myers and Trouba. So I don't know that the Jets are going to be looking for a right-handed shot defenseman coming back, or a right-handed shot defenseman prospect coming back. You know, I look at the Devils. The Devils got a lot of D-men in their system. You know, got a lot of good young D-men. Maybe not number one or two guys, but real solid guys. A guy like, you know, maybe they'd part with a Damon Severson. Maybe they'd part with an Eric Jelena. I don't know, but the Devils are in the playoff hunt, and they might be a team that takes a swing. The Islanders, they like to take big swings. You know, and they've got Johnny Boychuk hurt going into the trade deadline. And they've got Travis Hamonic, who's hurt. He's going to be back, I believe, after the All-Star break. But he wants out. So do you go get Dustin Bufflin? Maybe you move Hamonic. I don't think you move Hamonic in that deal. But you know Hamonic does want to go to Winnipeg. That's his preferred destination. Maybe something gets worked out there. Andrew Ladd, I'd look at the Flames. The Flames, don't look at the point total, look at the point percentage. And the Flames are still in the playoff hunt, and I still believe they're going to end up third in the division. I believe it's going to end up going LA, Anaheim, Calgary. I don't think San Jose will last, because I don't think San Jose wants to add at the trade deadline. I don't believe Arizona's going to stay where they've been, and they probably aren't going to be a team that looks to add at the trade deadline. Probably can't afford to. And Vancouver's not going to be a team that adds at the trade deadline, because they're in the midst of a rebuild, even though they're still in the playoff hunt. Calgary might do that. Calgary, Brian Burke, Brad Treliving, they might see that as a chance. Okay, let's add. Let's go for this playoff spot. Let's get this team back in the playoffs. Man, Andrew Ladd, he would fit perfect there. You know, maybe a move, Yuri Hudler in another deal. Hudler hasn't been what he was last year, not to mine or probably most people's surprise. Yuri Hudler's been pretty average this season. Yuri Hudler, yeah, it's just not a shock that he's digressed this season. Andrew Ladd fits that team much better. It gives them a little more size up front that they could use. They got pushed around pretty good by Anaheim last year. Ladd would ensure that there wouldn't be as much of that going on. So I could really see the Flames getting in on Andrew Ladd. There's one more that I want to hit on before I talk about something else. I'm actually going to double back to the Oilers, and then I'm going to talk about the top 50 prospect list I got coming out soon. But James Reimer, and he's a UFA, and the Leafs goaltending situation is kind of up in the air right now. You've got Reimer, you've got Bernier. Bernier's still in a contract for another season. Do you re-sign Reimer? Do you trade Bernier? Do you keep Bernier? Do you trade Reimer? If Reimer is available, especially Reimer, the St. Louis Blues have to go get him. And I now officially adore Brian Elliott. I've always thought this guy is not a good goaltender. He's a product of the system. He's whatever. He's garbage. Hope Brian Elliott's not a listener. And I'm sure he is. Soups on Sports, it's taking North America by storm, I'm sure. Brian Elliott, he's never been that good of a goaltender. His numbers always look much better. I mean, he plays in a Ken Hitchcock system. It's a lot of goaltenders put up big numbers in a Ken Hitchcock system. But anyway, he's got the blue pads now. I love the guy. Wore the Cujo mask the other night. Oh, just adore the guy. What a beauty. He can't be your number one goaltender in the playoffs. Neither can Jake Allen. They've tried both. Neither work. You cannot go into the playoffs with either of those two guys. James Reimer, on the other hand, he's been a pretty good goaltender for the Leafs. And the Leafs, and I commended them for this move after the 2013 season. They moved off of James Reimer and went with Jonathan Bernier. James Reimer isn't very athletic for a goaltender. He's a space eater, and he's a battler. But he gets results. He's got amazing numbers this season when he's been healthy. 2013, he carried the Leafs back into that series against Boston. They don't have that third period collapse against Boston if it's not for James Reimer. And I don't mean that in, well, James Reimer cost them. No, I mean James Reimer got them there. He was great in that series. He doesn't look great when he's in net, but he gets the job done. And so he would be the guy. I mean, I don't know who the other guy would be that the Blues could target now that the Oilers have locked up Cam Talbot. I don't think the Flames are going to let go of Kari Ramo. I guess Cam Ward would be the other guy, but then Carolina's battling for a playoff spot right now. So is Carolina going to trade Ward? Or are they going to trade Eric Staal? That's another guy the Blues could target that would upgrade them. And the Blues aren't weak down the middle. But if the Blues could get Eric Staal, you move David Backes to the wing. David Backes could still take faceoffs. There's a lot the Blues could do there. But, man, James Reimer would be the guy for me if I'm St. Louis. I know they tried this already with Ryan Miller and it failed, but Ryan Miller was not having the season that James Reimer's having this season. But again, barring the injuries. But, man, James Reimer, he's had a big season. He's had big seasons before. He's had good playoffs. He would be the guy, I think, in that system. He would look even better. He could be a guy that could take the Blues to that next level. Because, man, if the Blues don't do it this year, I just don't. You might as well blow that group up. You might as well let David Backes walk because they're not doing it. They're not. Doug Armstrong's going to have to face the fact they're not going to get the job done. Yeah, they can be a good team. They can be a playoff team for 3, 4, maybe even 5 more years. But they're clearly not going to win anything. You know what the Blues? Kevin Shattenkirk's name's out there. If Kevin Shattenkirk's name's out there, I got to think they're looking to do something big. So it'll be interesting to see. It's a month away. Jeez, I've already gone 40 minutes here. Once I edit this down, it won't be 40 minutes, but it'll be well over 30, and I wanted to keep it short this week for the first podcast. So I've been doing a lot of writing lately. Work slow. The economy's shitty in Alberta. I don't need to tell any of you that. But I'm doing this Retro Oilers Week, and I put the first piece out today. You know, I didn't get much feedback on it. I got lots of reads. It got lots of hits, actually, but I didn't get much feedback on it. One of my buddies, my buddy Troy, he messaged me back. My buddy Scott always does. Scotty, he's a Fitz, if you're listening, you're a beauty, buddy. Can't thank you enough. Don't know how much Bruce is paying you. Probably not much these days. $30 oil. Yeah, I'm having fun writing these pieces. You know, I did the one on Marchand and that series, that 97 series against Dallas. I got one coming out tomorrow on the rest of the series that happened against Dallas. And the Oilers lost every single one of them. They were 0-5 the rest of the way. Really depressing. But, you know, you think back to the time. Yeah, they were 0-5 against Dallas after that. But they didn't have a chance. There was no, and I say this in the piece, there was no blueprint for a small market team to win, especially playing the style that the Oilers wanted to play. The Oilers were the one of maybe 2 or 3 teams in the league at that time that wanted to play a fun, up-tempo, hard-hitting style. That wasn't the way any other team wanted to play. So they were adored throughout the league as the funnest team to watch. And man, they just had a real, I don't think I'm being a homer when I say this, they had a real lovable team. They always felt like they were everybody's second favorite team at that time. They are now, and it pains me a little bit to say this, but they are now, or they were then what the Flames are now. Like, the Flames seem to be everybody's second favorite team. Get a lot of love from other opposing teams' fans. Like, because they never quit. They're hardworking. They're doing all the right things. They're doing all the little things. That's what the Oilers were back in those days. You know, even though they didn't win anything, you love that that was your team. So, you know, it's fun writing about those teams. Those teams kind of completely get forgotten now. It's either talking about the rebuild or talking about the 80s Oilers. You know, that 06, the 96 to 06, like I said, the Ryan Smith era is pretty much the only way to describe the era. You know, those teams, they were fun to watch. They were fun to pull for. And they were the plucky underdog. And as I say in that piece tomorrow, you know, it really was. Those series against Dallas were good versus evil. It was the big market against the smallest of small markets. You know, the poorest team, maybe the poorest team in the league, against one of the richest teams in the league. And yeah, the Stars just spent and spent and spent. And the Oilers had no other choice but to just build it the proper way. I mean, if they could have bought free agents, I'm sure they would have, but they couldn't. They couldn't afford anybody. You know, their big free agent pickup in the summer of 2001, when the Dallas Stars were buying Pierre Turgeon, and I want to say that was the summer they got Bill Guerin. It might have been, that was the following summer that they got Bill Guerin. But the Stars for a couple years there went on even more of a spending spree than they had been on when they got Ed Belfour and Brett Hull. And the Oilers' big pickup in the summer of 01 was Steve Staios for $500,000. And I do remember saying, this is funny, I guess Craig Button's not a GM anymore, but the Flames got Bob Bugner that same summer, and I remember saying at the time, that's why the Oilers are where they are, and that's why the Flames are where they are. Remember, the Flames were in the midst of a 7-year playoff drought, and I wasn't a Flames hater, but just that's why the Flames were where they were, is they kind of went a little bit big on Bob Bugner, and the Oilers got this guy Steve Staios off the scrap heap, who was the same guy, if not a little better than Bob Bugner. He wasn't as big a hitter, but you know, you saw what Steve Staios became, a pretty serviceable. I always thought he got overrated, but you know, he really embodied what it meant to be an Oiler at that time. And yeah, I also tell the story about meeting Greg Millen. It wasn't the first time I met Greg Millen, and it wasn't the last time I met Greg Millen, but it was definitely the most interesting time that I met Greg Millen. And I couldn't stand Greg Millen at the time and thought he was a total asshole. And all three times that I met him, he didn't disprove that theory, let's just say that. And so I kind of worked that story in there and talk about how Greg Millen is what I thought he was, and I guess I'm not letting him off the hook. First podcast, terrible jokes. But Chris Cuthbert, I got to meet him that same time, and yeah, he was who I thought he was as well. That was a beauty. That was great. That's a good story. Hopefully that's a good read for you guys tomorrow. And then Wednesday, I'm doing a piece on kind of how the Oilers had to sell everybody off, and by the end of 2004, they kind of became buyers. Like, you saw that transformation in the midst of, right in the middle of that era. They went from having to sell everybody to now we're buyers. Now we can spend a little bit. And, of course, I'll talk about the outdoor game in that time. And I believe that's Wednesday. And then Thursday, I feel like I'm forgetting one. Oh, Thursday, I talk about the Chris Pronger trade. And that's not going to be a long one, obviously, but that was and I'm not talking about when Chris Pronger, I'm not talking about the infamous Chris Pronger trade. I'm talking about the one that took the Oilers from afterthoughts in the playoffs to going into the 06 season. Everybody around the league was saying, hey, this team's going to be dangerous. You know, just talking about what happened at that time, what the climate was like, and stuff like that. And then Friday, obviously, I cap it talking about the 06 run, talking about my experiences as a fan being in the building for a lot of that 06 run. And like I said in the piece today, I mean, it hit me the other day. I will have been in attendance for the final playoff game in Rexall, well, Edmonton Coliseum, whatever you want to call it. I'll have been at the final playoff game, and that was 10 years ago this June. 10 years ago, June 17th, 2006. I can't believe how much time's flown. So yeah, hopefully you guys like that with the All-Star break here. And, you know, I'll probably come up with a few more things to write over the next few days. Doing the gloves are off tomorrow or today, whenever I get this podcast uploaded and allow people to hear it. That should be interesting. Moses Waldo and Andrew Bredauer, and first time on TV doing a show, so a little bit nerve-wracking, but hopefully that goes well, and hopefully everybody who's in Lloyd can check it out and probably mock me for the job I do, and I'm sure I'll get lots of love for it in the dressing room with the rec team I play on with the Flyers, but that comes with the territory. The one more thing I wanted to hit on before I go today, got a top 50 prospect list coming out in addition to the mock draft. I know the mock drafts always go over well with people. I put a lot of work into them, and so that's good that people enjoy them. I can't see a lot of those kids play, so it does take it probably takes more work trying to research these kids than it would to actually just see some game film on them. But yeah, I have fun doing it. I try and put a lot of thought into doing it and what teams might be thinking going into the draft, and giving you a little insight there. Hopefully I do anyway. But yeah, I needed a top 50 list of my own because, you know, it gets a little tiring talking about the player and the team's needs all at once. You know, you end up writing well over a paragraph on each kid, and it's just too much. So, you know, you separate it, it's easier to read. You get where I'm coming from when I do my top 50 prospects, and then you get where I think the team's going to go when I do the mock draft. So hopefully that makes it both a good read and makes both easy to read. So we'll get that out here in the next... I'm still debating whether that's going to be this week or next week, because the prospects game being on Thursday, I'm pretty sure Bob McKenzie's, I don't know what he'll do. Top 30 is usually what he does for mid-season rankings. He'll have his mid-season rankings out right away, and I like to do it after the fact. But if I decide I can get it done by this weekend, then I'll, you know, see where it's at after Bob McKenzie does it, and then I'll update it after McKenzie does it. Either way, so that's coming out, and the Oilers pieces this week, and yeah, a lot more pieces coming out, doing the podcast, and hopefully you guys like reading my stuff, and hopefully this podcast, this was shaky today, to say the least. They're going to be shaky to start with, but hopefully I can get a little bit better at this craft and start doing some podcasts you like. I can't do music. That's what sucks. It would be nice to have some music. I probably will eventually work in some sound drops, but yeah, all I can have right now is non-copyrighted music. So I can put in some real shitty music if you guys want. I'm sure, I mean, anybody who's listening to this right now will be a buddy of mine. I'm pretty sure it's not going out to anybody else, but hey, the only way I'm going to get better at this is by doing it constantly. So this will be the first of many. So this will be it for the podcast this week. I'll be back with another one probably next Monday or next week sometime anyway. So, thanks for checking it out, and hope you guys have an awesome week.